Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, film critic and contributing editor for Las Vegas Weekly, returning after an extended hiatus. Very exciting to be back. And joining me this week is Jason Harris, filmmaker, actor, comedian, frat boy of comedy. Thanks for joining me.
Hooray for my intro, everybody. Yes. Thanks for having me.
So let's start this week with Milk, which is a big Oscar-baiting biopic of Harvey Milk, who was the first openly gay man elected to a major public office in the United States. He was a San Francisco city supervisor in the late 1970s. And this is Sean Penn plays Harvey Milk in this movie. And I... You know, these sort of Oscar bait movies, I think, often are a little dull and a little formulaic, you know, in their own way, like blockbusters. And this was a very biopic formula movie, I thought. Despite Gus Van Sant, who directed it, having made a bunch of, like, very strange sort of experimental films in the last several years, Last Days and Jerry and Elephant, Paranoid Park. This is a very straightforward movie. Pretty much paint by numbers kind of thing. And the real story of the guy of Harvey Milk, I think, is interesting. And, you know, you can learn a little from this movie, but it's not, I think, really all that compelling as like a narrative. I mean, at least that was how I found it.
It's interesting because Gus Van Sant, you know, who's made some great movies, Good Will Hunting, obviously, is probably his most well-known and just one of I think a lot of people's favorite movies. The movies that you've mentioned, like Last Days, for instance, didn't do much for me. Elephant was interesting, you know, an interesting take on the problems with school shootings and whatnot. But but I don't know. I think he actually works better in the mainstream format because he brings indie sensibilities and indie, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there isn't a whole lot of indie sensibility in
this movie,
I guess
though. There are some artistic, you know, things that I wouldn't have seen, you know, had it been a more mainstream filmmaker. But I understand what you're saying. I didn't love it. I liked it. Yeah. I think, you know, you go because you want to learn about the character and you know, it's a well-acted piece as to be expected.
Yeah, sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, Sean Penn is good and it's nice to see him not, like, playing some sort of, like, anguished, you know, constantly tearing his hair out kind of character. I mean, other than, you know, getting assassinated, Harvey Milk, you know, is actually a pretty happy, upbeat guy. And I liked Sean Penn's performance.
He's always just really interesting. I think he's one of the most interesting actors to watch nowadays. And I think he gets some backlash because of all of his political involvement. But I think for the most part, he brings something interesting to the screen and everything. And in this one, where he could have taken it completely flamboyantly over the top, considering, you know, the subject matter. Honestly, he could have played it way hammed up. He really did a good job, especially with the more quiet moments and everything in the movie, which to me stand out, I think, above the, you know, some of the bigger scenes and whatnot.
Yeah, so. I mean, those were all good. And the acting, the supporting performances were also perfectly good. James Franco, who plays Milk's longtime boyfriend. And
to me, that was kind of, and I like Franco, you know, all the way from the days back to Freaks and Geeks, but I thought he was relatively one note in this, you know.
I mean, they all, like, he was, like, I think it's not his fault necessarily. It's the characters, you know.
Yeah.
They all kind of serve a purpose, and the James Franco character serves the same purpose as the sort of significant other character in so many other biopics, which is, you know, he supports Harvey when he hasn't got anything going for him, and then when Milk becomes, you know, this big deal, then he doesn't have time for James Franco, and James Franco says, you know, it's either me or the job, and then he leaves. I mean,
yeah, and then he meets the opposite, which is the Diego Luna character, who's like crazy and you know, neurotic and, you know, just a large character as opposed to Franco, who's kind of a more self-contained character.
And those are both kind of stock types, I think, of the biopic. I mean, you know, it's gay relationships rather than straight relationships, but other than that, it's very similar to what you might see in, you know, any of these other kind of, you know, true story of somebody's life. So
it's an interesting subject matter. I'm glad they brought it to film, you know, and I think Sean Penn probably will get an Oscar nomination for
it. Well, sure, sure. I mean, that's kind of how these movies go, I think. You know, everybody sort of gets their de facto Oscar nomination.
Maybe Emile Hirsch in a supporting part.
Yeah, he was all right. But again, you know, they just don't give him that much to work with.
Yeah, he didn't do much for me, but as far as, like, the supporting characters, his was the most kind of...
Right, the most significant, the most... What, I don't know, varied, maybe?
I'm not quite sure. Just the one that jumped off the screen the most.
Yeah.
But as I told you after the movie, I honestly, my hope for the movie, which will never happen, of course, is I was sick of Austin Powers and Borat, like both movies that I enjoyed when they came out. But yeah, after hearing all the yeah babies and high five, you know, from those,
sure,
I really want Harvey Milk's catchphrase to catch on completely right.
You
at
just,
random.
You just
want to
do your Harvey Milk impression.
It's not good at all. I just
no,
feel
you
like
just
if
go
you
for
were
it.
Having a conversation and you just brought out the, you know, I'm Harvey Milk and I want to recruit you and just to get the blank stares.
Yeah.
It'd
yeah.
be worth it for me, right. you yeah. know.
If you've seen the movie, that's very amusing, but
maybe not.
Otherwise, all right. So I would give this movie, I think, 2.5 stars. It's kind of a right down the middle thing for me. I don't know if you want to give it as some sort of wacky rating.
Why can't it just be a different rating? It always has to be wacky, you know.
So, well, because the last time you were here, you gave wacky
they
ratings.
They weren't wacky; they were just individual. I will give this out of 10 gay pride parades. I will give this 7 gay pride parades.
No, that's you know, that's a good strong rating.
Okay. Yeah, and gay pride parades are, you know,
also good and
a lot of fun, probably.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yes.
Everyone's always celebrating. You know, it seems like they're having a good time.
That is true, until they get assassinated.
Oh. You
all
took
right.
that. You rained on the gay pride parade of this podcast, didn't
sorry,
you?
Sorry about that. Okay, let's move on, strangely enough, to another by-the-numbers sort of biopic, which is a biopic of, like, several people all in one.
Chess Records.
Really. Right, the Chess Records label. The movie is called Cadillac Records, with Adrian Brody as Leonard Chess, who is the co-founder of Chess Records, which was a very influential record label in the... Somebody has entered the room and left.
That was an awkward moment in podcast history, guys.
We'll edit that out in post. What was I saying?
Chess Records. Leonard Chess, Adrian Brody started a record label in
exactly.
Chicago.
Exactly.
Race Records.
Yes, Race Records. It was the early 50s when it started. He started with Muddy Waters, who's played by Jeffrey Wright in this movie, and did a lot of blues, very, very popular blues records, and then sort
and
of
influential.
Influential also. And early days of rock and roll. I mean, the movie spans a long period of time and sort of jumps from one.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it. It felt like, you know, maybe we're all condensing it into a year or
right.
two.
And that's really what they did. All of a sudden, occasionally there'll be years on the screen and you realize, oh, 3 years have passed, 4 years have passed, you know, something like that. So, yeah, which was part of the problem. I think there's a lot of probably very interesting material in the lives of all these people who are involved. Leonard Chess and Muddy Waters, Etta James, who's played by Beyoncé Knowles, who shows up like more than halfway into the movie and yet ends up being
a big character.
Little Walter, the harmonica player, played by Columbus Short, who has a big, you know, alcoholism problem. And
Chuck Berry, you know, which most Def plays
right and, right and who they barely touch on, and yet he has a lot of stuff. Like they talk about his arrest for sleeping with an underage girl, and like just the whole birth of rock and roll is kind of a side
well
note
they never
movie.
Even mentioned that he slept with an underage girl in the
well
movie.
He transported right. You kind of get the impression that that's what happened.
You get that impression.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, I didn't realize.
You've just been looking for friendship, so.
That's really what rock stars usually do with underage girls, is they look for friendship.
The road gets lonely? I don't know.
Well, right. Well, that's why they need to have sex with underage girls.
And Howling Wolf, who I think, at least going into, I knew the least about.
Right.
And coming out of, I know the least about.
Exactly. Yeah. He shows up in like 2 scenes.
And he sings a really interesting Howling Wolf song that I don't know. It just seemed like that was a character. He probably seemed like he had his act together more than the other people. And that's probably why he had less screen time. But I would have liked at least some more songs from him.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think everyone, even the major characters, even Muddy Waters and Leonard Chess, they're sort of, all you get are the sort of really basic highlights, you know, and every scene is one of those, you know, music biopic scenes. You know, when little Walter takes his first sip of alcohol, yeah, that, you know, he's gone, or, You know, you get Muddy Waters' girlfriend sitting at home alone crying while he's out carousing with women and things like that.
And she was good. Gabrielle Union was really good in this movie, I thought. But
yeah, she was fine. But, I mean, that's another one of those parts that doesn't offer you anything to play.
Well, I would agree. Honestly, I had problems with this movie from the writing standpoint because it would be, as you're saying, you would have a scene where, you know, there would be a conflict brought up. And then in the next scene, it would be resolved. Like, you know, there's a scene where Muddy Waters comes into Adrian Brody's or Leonard Chess's club before he has the record label.
Right.
And he gets the whole place shot up, right? And, now we have a conflict. And Leonard Chess says, get out of here, you know? And the next scene is like Leonard Chess rolls up in his Cadillac and he's like, I want to offer you a record contract. Right. I've been looking all over for you. And it's like, even from a writing standpoint, you could have condensed those into one scene, like, you know? And as you did the research, there's a lot of – it's very loosely based on
Right. And, I mean, research is a really – like an overstatement of – I mean, I looked up a handful of things on the internet. You know, it's not difficult. But the main thing seems to be that Leonard Chess's brother, Phil, was the co-founder of this label, and he's not even mentioned once, and that seems significant. And there's just, a lot of things that have been condensed for dramatic purposes, which is okay, and which is what you would expect. I'm sure that is the case in Milk as well.
But some of the things, like Leonard Chess's, can we talk about?
Right, his heart attack at the end of the movie.
Right, after the label... Yeah, he has to sell the label, right? And then a few months later, in real life, he had a heart attack and died.
Yeah.
In the film, it's once he drives away from it.
As he's turning the corner.
He didn't even make it down the street.
So as we were saying before we were so rudely interrupted by the battery on the recorder dying in the high-tech podcast studio here.
Well, the way I look at Cadillac Records was this. I was disappointed. I really, first of all, I love that music. I mean, and there's so much to choose from. Mm-hmm. You know, you have Muddy Waters, you got Etta James, you got Chuck Berry, where they played very little of Chuck Berry's music.
Right.
Howlin' Wolf, you got, Little Walter. There's so much there to choose from. And I feel like it would have been a much better musical, like not on the screen, but on stage. You know, that's the type of thing on Broadway where you don't necessarily need to chalk all the information in, and you could survive with just
the music. Right.
And the music was good in this. You know, all the actors sang the songs and did a really good job, I thought.
Yeah, they did well. Although one thing I noticed that I thought was sort of amusing is that for the most part, when you had a scene where, like, someone was recording a song in the studio, it would kind of start. Then, you know, there'd be, like, maybe a little montage or something. You move on to the next thing. But every time Beyoncé sang as Etta James, the whole movie just ground to a halt, and we just watched her sing.
Executive producer Beyoncé.
Exactly. I mean, and on the one hand, that's ridiculous in the context of the movie. But on the other hand, I was like, okay, well, she actually can sing well, and these are good songs. So I don't necessarily have an objection to hearing Beyoncé sing these songs. But it just showed that, like, they don't have a sense of, like, dramatic, you know, momentum to what's going on.
She was crying, I think, in every song she sang. It felt like, anyway. Yeah. But I, honestly, like, you know, there's a big scene where Etta James ODs and Leonard Chess. Adrian Brody, who, I don't know, man. I know he's got a best actor.
He won an Oscar, man.
But he just doesn't really. You know, I loved him in The Thin Red Line.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
With every other actor ever.
Who are all good. I mean, I guess if you have a Terrence Malick, you know, you get, like, top performances. I don't even remember him in The Thin Red Line, but I'm sure he was very good in that.
Yeah, everyone was good in that.
And everyone was. That's a great movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just, he didn't do much for me. And Beyoncé, after this, in this scene, it was, I have to say, it was kind of painful to watch.
Yeah, like, she's not a good actress.
This was not good. This was, you know, she's crying and nobody loves me and, you know, what are you going to do for me? You're like every other man. And it just was not a good performance. And sadly, the movie, you know, is not what it should have been. And, you know, I guess, you know, the reason they call it Cadillac Records is because he would buy his artist Cadillacs. But I don't know. It's such a major point in the title. It didn't really play into it.
Yeah,
they
could have just called it Chess Records and it would have been
probably better,
you know, more descriptive and stuff. So, yeah, disappointing. And especially, I think, compared to Dreamgirls, which is a similar kind of story, although it's more fictionalized with this uses real names, even though they changed the story so much. And I love Dreamgirls. A lot of people don't like Dreamgirls.
I love Dreamgirls also, and from a writing standpoint and a story and direct, right. Everything was better in Dreamgirls.
And and the music in Dreamgirls, I think, is a lot more prominent. As you were saying, I think it helps sort of smooth things out in the plot when you have these jumps in years and things like
Well, the music in Dreamgirls was used to advance the story a lot.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Jennifer Hudson won an Oscar because that song was like
pretty much
amazing.
Yeah.
It was, she killed it, and it was just amazing, but it was so important to the movie. You know, and I don't think there was one song that was really important to the movie. I would say the highlight of the movie for me, besides the music, Jeffrey Wright's he's such a great actor.
He is, but I mean, I don't think I necessarily was blown away by his performance in this movie. I mean, I thought he did a good job, but, you know, it goes back to what we were saying before. Like, there's just not much to work with here, and you can have the greatest actor of all time, but if you've written him a flat part, you know, with a bunch of sort of bland expository dialogue, then you can only take it so far.
He's
an excellent actor, and you know, he doesn't exactly get a whole lot of leading roles.
It's nice to see him on screen when you get to see him
right
on screen.
Absolutely. You know, more on here than in Quantum of Solace, certainly.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, he doesn't have a whole lot of lines in Quantum of Solace. No, he does not. That might have been an interesting twist for the Quantum of Solace. They could get the character to sing the theme song. You know?
Yeah.
That would have been something new.
Bring Bond into the, you know, I don't know,
yeah,
1940s.
So I think 2 stars for the Cadillac Records on from my perspective.
Yeah. I would say out of, 5 used Cadillacs.
Yeah.
Well, you do 5.
Right. Oh, you want a different number?
No, I'll stick with
5.5.
I'm gonna agree with you. It's a 2.
Yeah.
It's 2 used Cadillacs. And one of them has, you know, needs its tires.
It's got the doors taken off.
Like
of
Little
it,
Walter.
As Little Walter does in the movie. Yeah. Third movie coming out this week, one that you did not see, and you really missed out on this one, let me tell you, is Punisher War Zone, which is the third attempt to make a movie out of the Punisher comic book character, who's basically just a dude who kills criminals. He doesn't have any superpowers or, you know, fancy whatever. He has a shirt with a skull on it, and he kills people. And this version features Ray Stevenson, who was on the show Rome on HBO. And he plays the Punisher this time around. Dominic West, who was from another HBO show, The Wire, which is a great show, plays the villain Jigsaw in this movie, not to be confused with Jigsaw from the Saw movies. And one thing I think they sort of did right in this movie, it's not a very good movie, but it's probably the best version of the Punisher that's been done to date, because it's just so unbelievably over the top. It's really quite campy in the sort of extreme violence that they portray in this movie. I mean, the Punisher punches a guy and basically his entire face like flies off. I mean, it's ridiculous. And Dominic West as Jigsaw, who is sort of like Two-Face in that his face is all mangled. He's got these cuts and he looks hideous. And he gives this really, really over-the-top performance in this horrible, exaggerated New York accent that alternates between being hilarious and being annoying.
How does it sound?
I'm not gonna do it. You know, we had the Harvey Milk impression. I think that was enough.
I think the audience wants to hear Josh Bell do Jigsaw.
You know what? I wish I could think of some. You know, bring. I can't do it, man. It's just
you can.
It's you know, the Punisher. I need you to bring me the Punisher. You know, and I'm doing a horrible accent, but as horrible a job as I'm doing, he does just as bad a job in the movie. And yeah, it's really bad. The Punisher barely speaks, which is probably for the best. He doesn't speak until 25 minutes into the movie, and he just kind of goes around and shoots people in the face. And there's a lot of it's a very colorful movie. The sort of oversaturated images that the director Lexi Alexander uses, and she's a former kickboxing and karate champion.
Nice.
So, you know, knows something about action, and the action is okay. I think if all you want is a movie about a dude who punches people's faces off, then you would probably enjoy it.
Interestingly, I heard that the reason he punched a guy in the face and his face exploded off or whatnot is based on the real incident involving the first Punisher, Dolph Lundgren, when he punched a guy and his face just flew off.
Right. Well, I think Dolph Lundgren is really the gold standard for the Punisher. No, I mean, the Punisher has not exactly been well-treated at the movies between Dolph Lundgren and even the one from 2004 with Thomas Jane, who is an all right actor, but that was a pretty flat portrayal of the Punisher. So this one has a couple fun moments, though. I would give this 2.5 stars. It's, you know, about as good as Milk. you know.
It's weird and very similar. They're going to be competing for the same audience.
Yeah, right. The gay audience, really. You know?
Yeah, gay action audience. Yes. It's weird that they get so many comic book movies right or close to right, and they can't get the Punisher anywhere.
No, I mean, I think part of the problem is that in the comic books, you know, what Marvel is sort of trying to do with their movies, like with the Hulk movie and the Iron Man movie, where they connect in this sort of the same universe. In the comic books, all these characters exist, all the Marvel characters exist in the same universe. So the Punisher is not just a guy who goes around killing people, but he lives in the world where there's Spider-Man and there's the X-Men. And so a guy with no powers who just shoots criminals is an interesting contrast. But when you take him away from that world, then he's just a guy who shoots people, which is, you know, we've seen that in however many action movies.
It would be more interesting if they put him in a world where there are superheroes and villains with powers, and he's just a
right, and he's just a guy. Dude, yeah. Right, so. And I think, I mean, they get some of that with the Jigsaw character here, who's obviously, he looks very comic booky, but he still doesn't have any superpowers, so maybe he can show up in Iron Man 2, I don't know. And speaking of superheroes, on DVD this coming Tuesday is the biggest superhero movie in a long time, probably the biggest movie of the year, I would say, is The Dark Knight, the sequel to Batman Begins with Christian Bale as Batman and Heath Ledger as the Joker, obviously, and Aaron Eckhart as Harvey Dent, a.k.a. Two-Face, which I was disappointed in this movie. Everyone loves The Dark Knight. I think this is probably the most universally acclaimed movie of the year in terms of critics and fans. And I mean, comic book fans more than anything, and I'm a big comic book fan, went nuts over this movie because they felt like it really captured this sort of the grandeur of the Batman character. And it's this big, heavy, serious crime epic. And I thought it was just, it's so heavy and so serious. It was weighed down by that sort of grimness that it wanted everything to be really, really meaningful. And, you know, Christopher Nolan is the director who I think has a lot of talent, and there's a lot of good stuff in this movie, but I just think it's overrated. So,
yeah, I liked it. I mean, it didn't sound like, from what you said, you didn't like it.
I mean, I don't want to say, like, I don't want to exaggerate my response because I didn't dislike it. I just felt like the reaction from so many other people was so out of proportion to the quality. Like, I think there's a lot of good things about this movie.
Well, I think, you know, obviously the hype and people wanted to see Heath Ledger. And
who does a good job.
Yeah. And the other thing is the Batman movies, I think, you know, the first one that Nolan did and this one both provide a lot of character development, you know, and obviously all the action that people want. And on top of that, you know, he's a really good director, you know. So
he is.
Everything looks good. Everything's got a good style to it and everything.
Yeah, so. Although some of the action in this movie, I think, was a little hard to follow. Some of the chases, it was a little incoherent, I think, in terms of, like, where is this person in relation to this other person, kind of basic information that you want from an action movie.
Well, it is called The Dark Knight, and I think, you know, sometimes the you know, the superhero.
It's not called The Blurry Night.
No, though. I didn't mean it like that. What I'm saying is, I think people might have liked it because if you look at, you know, and maybe I'm just off on a random tangent here, but if you look at, you know, society, you know, and everything.
Sure, yeah.
I think people want that kind of anti-hero hero, which he kind of plays. You know, he's got the bad boy image. He's still a rich guy, but he's not afraid, you know, to go after it.
Well, yeah, that's obviously what they're trying for. And I just think, it was overplayed. And I think just from a basic storytelling standpoint, this movie is really long.
Yeah.
And it's far too long. And there are so many diversions where they capture the Joker and then he gets away. Then they almost get him and then he gets away. And there's that whole sequence with the people on the boat and the ethical dilemma about whether they're going to blow up the other boat. That could have been completely cut out. So, I mean, I just think I wanted to like this movie. And I did like a lot of things that went on in this movie. I mean, it's certainly better than, say, you know, Punisher or Warzone or whatever. But I think it had a lot of flaws, and I think Nolan sort of overreaches.
Well, maybe the two biggest movies of the year were this and Iron Man, probably.
Yeah, maybe, or yeah, I think that would be fair to say.
And they're pretty much opposite movies.
Right, they are in their approach, and I liked Iron Man a little more, although that was another one that I wasn't as enthused about as some people were.
Yeah.
But that's a very bright, sort of upbeat,
popcorn, good,
you know.
Fun, yeah,
right, so. But I had a lot more fun watching that movie. I didn't have any fun, I would say, watching The Dark Knight.
I mean, I liked The Dark Knight. I probably would agree that I liked Iron Man a little more. You know? But, you know, who knows? I'm guessing I'll probably watch them both again at some point, and we'll see how they hold up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think The Dark Knight has enough fans that it'll probably, you know, stand the test of time for a while at least. So, all right. Since the podcast has been off for a few weeks, just I wanted to give a couple recommendations for some movies that are out in theaters now that I think are worth checking out for people. And I think I actually did this the last time we were on. I mentioned these two movies, Mike Leigh's Happy Go Lucky and Jonathan Demme's Rachel Getting Married, which are two of my favorite movies of the year, I think. And both are still playing in Vegas in a handful of theaters. Both really smart and insightful dramas about very different kinds of subject matter, I think. One, Happy Go Lucky, which is about a woman who is, you know, upbeat and cheery, but it's an interesting, I think, serious examination of sort of like what it takes to be happy and how you can maintain happiness in the face of downers coming from everywhere, from other people and people who resent that. And Rachel Getting Married, which has a great performance from Anne Hathaway as this rehabbed, drug-addicted woman who goes to her sister's wedding. So both of those, I think, are worth checking out, as well as Let the Right One In, which is a cool vampire movie from Sweden that's playing over at Village Square now. And I know you're a big fan of Zach and Miri Make a Porno, which is the new Kevin Smith movie that's out right now as well.
Yeah, I liked it. I wouldn't go so far as to call me a big fan of
you're
it.
You're a small fan of it?
I'm a fan of it, just a normal fan of it. But it's good. It's the best Kevin Smith movie maybe since Chasing Amy, I would say.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that.
Jay and Silent Bob, very funny movie, Strike Back. But as far as like an overall movie with a story, and you know, it's the closest he's come to marrying what he does the best, which is just humor and strange characters mixed in with just good basic storytelling. You know,
right.
I always thought that, you know, Chasing Amy is a perfect example because he had insightful characters, simple story, but you believed it and you got lost in it. And, you know, it was, you know, that was a mainstream indie movie.
Yeah.
And I guess this is pretty much a mainstream indie movie also, you know, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a little more mainstream, I think, but it's a good balance, I think, of the mainstream. You know, something like Jersey Girl, which was all mainstream, is a terrible movie.
Yeah.
And this has some of that sentimentality to it, but has a lot more of the vulgar edginess that is in his earlier movies.
Yeah, so. I mean, he's gotten to that point where, you know, obviously, yeah, you would say the first three movies he did had no Clerks, Mallrats,
right.
Chasing Amy, no sentimentality to
right.
it. But,
right.
I mean, that's obviously he got married, you know. He's,
sure, he got older and, fatter. And
yeah, so, I mean, he obviously wants to put this is the best he's done at kind of getting that, you know, sappiness into an honest version of a story.
Right,
not, you
right,
know, so.
Right. No, I agree. So, yeah, so check those out. All out right now. Happy Go Lucky, Rachel Getting Married, Zach and Miri Make a Porno, Let the Right One In. I would say all over the stuff that's opening new this week, which is all kind of mediocre, I think, although Milk may be worthwhile.
I think Milk is worth seeing. It's different and, you know, it's good. It's a good movie.
All right. Thank you, Jason Harris, for joining me this week. And did you have something to say?
I was going to say I always enjoy being here, and I'm happy to do it, and thank you.
Absolutely. So for Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell, and tune in next week.
Josh Bell hates everything except me.